Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. As always, I am your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today as we are rejoined by Nix Ingen, who, as you may remember, was on the podcast a few months ago talking. Well, the idea was that we were going to get to be talking about her practice of facilitating 5-MeO-DMT in Iceland. And really, we spent most of the time talking about kind of her process of self-discovery and transformation and experience. So the idea was that we'd bring her back on to talk more about facilitation. And that's what we've done for this week. And also even get more of her own background and own personal experience. And then also we have joining us Helgi, who is one of her housemates in Iceland, who has also been one of her clients, and sort of his perspective on working with Nix in the context of first taking MDMA and then working with 5-MeO-DMT. And Nix also gets into a little bit about how she works with DMT as well. So it's kind of a multi-pronged conversation that we're having today between the three of us. So I hope you find it interesting and informative. And of course, we will get to that very shortly. First of all, just like to say thanks to Aika, who has now joined up as a new patron over at my Patreon page. Thank you so much for your regular support that you've been giving Aika over the past couple months, and also now joining up over at Patreon, where you're a member of my elite group of patrons. It's not a large group. It's a small group. I don't have like a massive Patreon page or following or anything like that. But it's a great way to help support me and the podcast and the work that I do, which, you know, I'm completely 100% self-employed. So your support helps make all of this possible. If you'd like to join up over at Patreon, it's quite easy. There is a Patreon link at my personal webpage, martinball.net, at the top right of the page, along with the PayPal link. And you can join up at a monthly level of support, anywhere from $1 a month up to $100 a month. And at the top level, the God Molecule level, you also get a 1 hour monthly check-in or consultation with me, along with gifts with my art sent to you every 3 months and, you know, everything in between. So lots of ways to support the podcast and the work that I'm doing here, if you so choose. And also thank you to Stefan, who makes a monthly automatic payment through PayPal. It's a small donation in support of the podcast, but it's always greatly appreciated. So thank the both of you for your ongoing support. Coming up, of course, we do have just a bit more to go of Orbai's Vision, the audiobook of my novel. Few more chapters to go. We're kind of reaching the big conclusion, and I do hope to get to making an audiobook of the other three books of the Tales of Ardawin sometime soon. But, you know, I have been working very hard on this anthology of facilitating 5-MeO-DMT, which has a number of authors, including Nix, who is here on the podcast this week. And very close to getting that done. And I think that there's probably going to be more demand for the audiobook of that than for the Tales of Ardawin book. So that's probably going to be the next audiobook project that I work on. And I'm hoping that the book will be available probably within the next couple of months. I still have to finish doing some editing and formatting and designing the cover, but it's very, very close, almost to the point where I have a proof copy to get into my hands and, you know, do some final edits and reviews. But it's very close, so coming sometime this spring. And I think there's maybe 12 different authors that I've invited, or I should say facilitators, who have written up accounts that are in the book and covers a wide spectrum of material. I really think it's going to be a great book, and hopefully it will be well received out there in the world. So yeah, we have a few more chapters of Orbai's Vision. Then we've got Rob Bateman coming up, which I've already done the interview, but we're just holding on to that for the next cycle of the podcast. So that'll be coming up in a couple weeks from now. Then I have a number of interviews already lined up for early next month. People working on legal issues around psychedelics and religion. And we also have a couple different interviews with people working on developing healthcare products around psychedelics. So there's lots more to come on the podcast. And of course, I still have a big stack of books that I've got to read and get those authors on. So busy, busy, busy. Lots of stuff to do, not quite enough time to do it all. And I want to start working on a new album personally and start recording some music. So, you know, that's on my personal list. Anyway, Hope you're doing well. Hope spring is treating you well, because it's spring now, or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, hope fall is treating you well. And let's go ahead again to this conversation. Again, it's with Nix Ingen and with her roommate Helgi, and talking about MDMA, 5-MeO-DMT, and DMT, and also personal transformation and discovery, because, you know, that's a big part of the deal. Hope you enjoy having Nix back on the podcast. And just to let you all know, we did have some transmission issues, as happens, you know, with communications over the internet. So I've done my best to kind of edit it and deal with places where it got choppy and we lost stuff. And so there might be a couple places where the conversation seems to jump and have a little discontinuity. It's because I've edited out those places where we had some transmission issues. My apologies for that, but, you know, we got to work with what we have. So here it is. Enjoy.
It's a really big pleasure to see you again, Martin.
It's a pleasure to see you again as well, Nix. And it's a pleasure to see you, Helgi. Just so you know, we are recording. And so we're going to do something kind of unique today. So, Nix, we had you on the podcast before. And we were going to get to talk about your method and style of facilitating 5-MeO experiences. But we never really got all the way there, because we spent so much time talking about you and your history and your path and your transformation, which, of course, was all fascinating and all worthwhile. So there's absolutely no regrets there in any way, shape, or form. But it necessitated that we have you back on again to talk more specifically about facilitation. And we have kind of a unique situation here, because we also have with us Helgi, who has been one of your clients. So we're going to get to hear from you, Nix, about your side of things, and we're going to get to hear from Helgi about his side of things and his experience. So I think this should be quite interesting. So welcome to you both here to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And Helgi, we'll have you some time on to just to talk about music and tripping with music.
Yeah, that would be a wonderful discussion.
Yeah, because I know you like that kind of thing. I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, gosh, where would you guys like to start today?
I think it would be probably really nice, if you feel it, to go to that moment in the interview last time, where I was explaining how I was starting to work with my clients at the beginning with 5-MeO, in the sense that it was not just working with them, but also learning in the process how to work better and how to develop a better approach, where actually my approach with MDMA also started.
Yeah, I think that that's a great place to start, especially this idea that you're kind of learning as you're going, that you're developing as you are facilitating and finding what works, which I think is very different from, you know, some people out there get quote unquote training. I don't know how legitimate any of the training in 5-MeO really is. And then they seek to reduplicate that model of whatever it was that they learn. So, for example, this isn't to bash on anyone, but currently right now in Mexico, a lot of people are kind of following sort of a standard model of having people stand up and also holding their hands over the people's noses and mouths and make them hold it in. And then they're blowing rape up their noses, and then they're rattling and chanting. And honestly, in a lot of conversations with my integration clients, a lot of them don't like that style, but it's kind of this standard format that now a lot of people are just reduplicating. They're like, well, they do it this way in Mexico, and the toads are from Mexico, so this is how it's supposed to be done. But you've developed your own methodology. So yeah, let's talk about how you grew into that and what changes and modifications you made along the way to develop what I think is now your style. So go ahead and take us anywhere you'd like with that.
Okay, so, well, as you already know, the main reason I have been doing this is for my own development, and from there to share with others, right? So what I always try to search with every person I worked with is my own discoveries that I have with myself. And also, of course, seeing if this works with other people or not. So one of the first experiments I was doing at the beginning, I was actually thinking about this even before I was having FindMail at the beginning when I was experimenting with DMT. And it was how interesting it would be to mix both substances together, DMT and FindMail. And I remember the time that I proper mixed them. It was a really special moment because I went in Iceland to see the volcano.
Yeah.
And I was in front of the volcano in Iceland with a friend that I just almost met that day. And I just decided to put it in my vape that I have like electrical mess where you can put both substances and they melt at the same time. It's really practical, this method. And as I was doing it, I was actually watching the lava in front of me. It was quite spectacular. And I remember how I was just completely becoming the light that I was just seeing. And how that was actually the first time that I was able to experience completely this emptiness. That was the first time that I was really able to bring that with me, because when this happened at the time when I have this really strong breakthrough that I was speaking at the time in the last podcast with DMT, I went into there, but I was not able really to proper integrate that. It took me a long, long time to do that. And yeah, I remember like just realizing how I never felt so fucking light in the sense that it wasn't nothing, you know?
Yeah.
That in that moment, and I was completely realizing that that is actually what means to also be death, or to just be completely in your true nature. And after that, I was also being really aware that some of the parts that I was not allowing myself to work inside myself deeply, more deeply, it was because I was getting really easy overwhelmed by 5-MeO when I was using it myself. And also that is also the experience that I was having also when I was giving at a time to some friends, because I was still not feeling myself prepared to do formal therapy. So I was seeing how not only me, but also other people that without charging for it was also having this experience when I was giving in that moment, the 5-MeO. And then, yeah, I was always seeing this really big resistance to go farther. It was like one moment where it was too much. And then I felt like, okay, maybe this is just because the fear, you know, that is being developed when it's such an attack to the ego, when it's the ego dissolve it and recompose again, you know, and you're doing this multiple times during a session, the ego can get easily trigger in many cases if you are not completely working with with full capacity. And at that time I was not able to actually, because I was still in that path to fully understand who I am. So I remember at some point saying to a friend, I want to go with you to a cabin. I want to take MDMA. And I want to try to mix it with 5-MeO. And then there I saw myself how I was able to go once and over and over and over into the experience with really big amounts without any problem by myself. Because with MDMA, I was having this full capacity to surrender and to love what I was experiencing without any type of fear. So after I saw that, I started to check also with other people, with other possible clients that they were also knowing that this was experimental, that I was not having almost experience using this. And then I started to see quite good results. But I still, I was just feeling that I was not in my full capacity to work with people. And I was knowing that that was because I was still disconnected from myself, from the almost from the little parts. I was able to see how I was still having blocks, and they were really small, but still they were still there. And at some point it was so fucking obvious this, that I decided to go to a Vipassana retreat to make my mind a lot sharper. It was the sixth time I was doing a Vipassana, but my idea actually was right after Vipassana going into a 5-MeO experience. And that is what I did. And when I... yeah, it was in home, it was here, Helgi also saw it. But that was not the time, that was not the time. Let me explain. So the first time I went into that, I was first doing this body scan, preparing myself, being really sharp with my mind to really understand exactly where were the blocks inside myself. Then I did a small amount of 5-MeO. I was able to see that I was need a bigger amount, and then I went into a bigger amount. And finally, I managed to dissolve completely all reality, all self. And then it was really clear, really, really clear that I was just playing with myself all the time. Mm-hmm. That I, it was really... just this complete, absolute deception of myself, of, hey, you have been always playing that you are with others, but the truth is that you have always been alone. And the answer that... you are watching right now from here is just because that is the only being that exists. It's no one else, and this is what is actually true. This is reality. You just wake up from your own fantasy. And I remember when I went into there, I was like, okay, well, I guess what I can do, right? And then just two ideas came to me. First one was like, okay, I guess I can just allow myself to disappear. And then I saw that with fear at the moment. Or I can just see how I can make myself to enjoy And then I try that. And then I saw that actually I was able to. And then I saw like, okay, I'm going to even go farther with this and farther and farther. And it went into this loop of making, yeah, of masturbating myself, of having a greatest orgasm, bigger and bigger. And then I went back into this, into here. And when I went out of there, I was just able to realize where was my last fear. My last fear was to allow myself to dissolve myself, to disappear, to not exist anymore as existence. And it took me 5 days to get enough strength to say, okay, I think that I want to try this. And one of the things was happening is that I was just getting a lot of messages, really random, from different places saying to me, you already did this, you already allowed yourself to disappear. And what happened is that when you are not conscious, because you don't exist, you cannot be conscious of the non-existent itself. So what happened is it doesn't matter how much time goes through there, if really time succeeds at all, but that is another topic. and from there, what happens is that you just come back. But of course, anyway, from this human and, well, I don't, yeah, I think it's especially human perspective, just the idea of disappearing completely, stop to exist. Not only as, you know, as Nyx, but as the full existence. It was really hard to me to accept. It was like, okay, so what I am telling to myself is that actually I did that already, that I have been doing this kind of bungee jumping without a rope, and that I'm coming back from there. So it was this huge amount of trust that I was need to develop in myself to being able to do such a thing. But one of the things that I have been always really, really clear from the beginning in this life is that fear is my cage, is my walls. And the only way to grow, to enjoy life, to expand myself is going against that, is walking what I am afraid of. So I did it. I went into Vipassana meditation. I took a huge amount of 5-MeO. And then when I arrived to the same place, a full realization of that I'm just the existence and there's no one else, I allowed myself to disappear. Of course, I don't have memory of what happened after that. What I know is that after that, I come back. Yeah.
I remember this very clearly. Yeah, so
I want to invite Helgi in at this point. So you were there for this event with...
Well, Nyx. I was in the house. There was another housemate who escaped, who was aware that Nyx was going to attempt something very brave. He was like, okay, like I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm just going to go. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to stay in the house. And then at one moment, Nyx, she comes downstairs and knocks on my door. And there she is, completely naked. And and asking me if I can traumatize her. And I was quite confused. And I was not... I don't have a lot of experience in dealing with people who have like really strongly dissolved their egos and somehow they want to retain or reclaim some level of trauma or karma or something that brings them back into a grounded reality. Mm-hmm. So maybe Nyx can explain more what happened from her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember this event quite clearly.
And, yes.
Well, let me interject something here, just at the very practical level. And I think this is why a lot of people are using HAPE right now in conjunction with 5-MeO DMTs because HAPE is a form of tobacco with nicotine in it. And I think that actually the HAPE is a bit excessive because it's such a powerful experience, you know, getting tobacco blown up your nose and it really stings and there's kind of a violence to it. And there certainly have been issues with people having it blown up their nose during the 5-MeO experience when they're not really ready for it or not, they're not able to consent to that process. But the thing is, with people who are having trouble grounding after a powerful 5-MeO experience, or really any psychedelic experience, a little bit of tobacco, really a little bit of nicotine, it doesn't actually have to be tobacco, it can be, you know, an e-cigarette or something like that. But it's surprising how quickly a little bit of tobacco actually grounds the energy, or I should say, again, a little bit of nicotine grounds the energy very quickly. So it's kind of interesting that you showed up at Helgi's door naked, like asking for some kind of trauma to ground yourself. But just at the practical level, actually just having a couple drags off of a cigarette or a couple hits off of an e-cigarette can really quickly kind of whoop, the energy goes down. And actually it could be so fast sometimes that I always recommend that people sit down if they're going to do that. Because I have seen people who they're just like soaring as here, take a couple drags off the cigarette and I've seen them collapse on the ground. I mean, it literally grounds them. So I would just interject that as, you know, maybe not something quite as dramatic as Helgi, it traumatized me. You know, here, take a hit off my cigarette.
Yeah,
I did not traumatize her.
No.
Very good. Very good.
So
no, Helgi said, okay, let me play you this song I'm working on.
Yeah.
Maybe. But anyway, please continue your story.
So, what I was experimenting when I come back from there is that this sense that of everything that I was looking around me, including people, just everything was just myself. It was complete, absolute. And what I was experimenting inside myself was a constant bliss orgasm, not stopping.
Yeah.
And then this was the last breath of my ego. I can say somehow. My ego was so fucking upset of or scared. I don't know how to say it, but it was like my ego was able to see that it lost completely all type of control over over my attention, that wanted to recover that control back no matter how. And then one of the main things is that my ego was really, really aware that in this constant bliss and awareness that everything is just myself, it was not possible to make any type of projection, any type of fight, we can say, somehow. So the fight itself was trying to come back to a state where I was blocked through a trauma, and that was the intention. When I was doing this, I was actually with a friend that she had been with me in many, many moments of my life where I consume huge amounts of psychedelics. And I was actually expecting that she was able to know how to manage when I will come back from there, but she wasn't. But luckily, one of the things that I can say I'm glad is that even when my ego was searching to traumatize itself, I was not doing anything crazy. I was able to maintain calm, except for the plants.
The plants got hurt a little bit. A few leaves got ripped here and there. Glad that it got restrained to plants, not to human beings, and like.
And I was able also to call a friend. I mean, to ask for calling friend that also I have been working with FiveMail, and we were sharing also this experience. And that also I know that she was able to also make myself a lot more rounded. And then this is something that I have always used in case something in the opposite sense happened to a client. I have, I don't know now a translation in English, but I have two types of pills that cut completely any type of trip is happening.
Benzodiazepines, I think.
It's one type of benzos, another, but the other I don't remember. But it's if you get for whatever reason overdose of MDMA, this saves your life.
Okay.
And also sleep you. So since I was not able to stop this internal fight, it was going on about accepting that, integrating that. This friend come and also consume this thing. And what happened is that at some point I just completely fall asleep. When I woke up next day, I was like, fuck. Now I'm fucking scared about doing any type of psychedelic anymore in my life. I was like, this is done. I'm coming back to Spain and not going to work anymore with psychedelics in my life, you know. But then I was able to really see again, like how much that was a huge fear. And I managed to slowly make my ego more relaxed. And then after 2 days, I took some DMT. And that make me to have a little more trust, you know, a little more acceptance. And after another 2 days, I did the mix again of DMT with 5-MeO. Just a little bit, you know, for saying like, hey, you're touching again these waters and it's fine. Just fine. I was just really understanding how my ego is like a little animal just moving around my body, and the only thing that needs is just this caring attention, but of course not allowing that took my being completely. And then at some point they proposed me to do an ayahuasca retreat the next day with the honey queen, you know. And I was like, fuck, I know that if I go there, I'm going back again to the same place. But with my intuition was like, yes, this is what needs to happen. So I went there after just a week of this event to happen. And what happened in this ayahuasca retreat is that I went again into the same place of just feeling everything, everyone, as just myself, and having this really clear. And my ego again freaked out completely. But this time I was knowing that this was going to happen. So I was able to started to war with my ego there. To just calm it down, being able to make it to relax into this new way of perceiving everything, new way of just feeling this constant bliss. And then I just maintained myself there after ayahuasca. I was like for 3 days in that state, not stopping. And then at some point, my ego started to like say, please, I want to sleep, because I was not able anymore to sleep, by the way.
You can connect on that point.
Yes.
And then I went back a little bit. Not completely, it was like hybrid state. I was not able anymore to go back, really. And then I remember going again to the same bliss state. When I did rapé, it was just perfect. And then I just kind of like floating in, you know, in just surfing the wheel of samsara. You know what I mean, right?
Yes.
And one of the things that happened also, and this of course changed completely the way I was working with people, is that after the ayahuasca, just right after everyone finished, and I was just still, you know, there. One of the things I noticed is that when I was looking to someone, I was able to perceive them inside. I was able to just feel their all the sensations, like what issues, what blocks, and they have. And at the beginning, it was like a little annoying because the only thing I was needed was just to look to the people around me, and I was just feeling them.
Oh my God, this guy has a headache. He's walking next to me.
So, yeah, that was a little overwhelming, but slowly I was able to kind of play with that. And now what happens is that if I want, it's something I choose. It's not something is just happening by looking to someone directly. I mean, it's quite happening that way, but not so strongly. It's not like I'm just, fusing completely when I'm just looking to another person. And of course, that changed completely the way that I started to work with Paimeo, because what happened is that now when I'm working with someone and I am so sitting on a person, I exactly know where exactly to touch and to focus and to make the person to focus. And sometimes I took 5 mail while this is happening multiple times, sometimes in the session. Sometimes I don't even need it. I'm just so fucking connected that I can just work with that energy. And well, this is also one of the realizations I remember having in the ayahuasca about like how, like, yeah, okay, I solved the maze that I put to myself. and I am now free of this heaviness that I was having before. I can choose in any moment if I want to be happy by just choosing it. But not the people around me. And it's like, this huge compassion of I want the full planet to be free of suffer. And actually, one of the things that happened the first time after Vipassana, because I didn't talk completely that part. Like I say it the second time when I went into completely dissolving myself, disappearing. But the first time when I come back, one of the experiences that I had, and also Helgi, hear me.
I heard some dreams, I remember.
Yeah, is that when I was integrating back, when I was coming back from being everything, I decided to, instead of integrating myself as this body, this human, I integrate myself as a planet. And I was able to feel and to hear all the conscience in this planet. And I remember to have this huge orgasm, so intimate, when I was able to feel, understand that I was being here and felt by the rest of the conscience, and how every conscience this planet was able to feel each other. And we were screaming from the deepest of our guts of pleasure of being able to do such a thing. And yeah, I remember how when I came back from there, I was, how amazing will we, when finally we will be able to completely fuse our conscience and just born as a planet. Because that is also what is going on. So yeah, one of the things, of course, is I went into this type of war with the people, but one of the things I found that is so amazing of using MDMA when I'm working with other people is that before I'm giving to the person 5 mil, I can actually really understand if it's the moment or not to continue with that. Because I had, for example, a person that we were going to work with 5 mil, but we started first with MDMA, and that was enough because he was actually having so much to process already. Mm-hmm. That we were that it was not having any sense to continue that session with 5 mil. And other thing that I found is that usually during the sessions, especially at the end, sometimes I do it at the beginning, but usually at the end, I start to mix 5 mil with DMT. And that also gives the person a lot more sense of understanding, not only in a sensorial physical way, but also in more mental way. So that actually allows them to integrate a lot more the experience when they are coming back.
Like, this is really interesting to compare the two of you, because I've heard very different takes on the mixing of DMT with 5-MeO. I know Martin has been attacked very much by DMT enthusiasts as a 5-MeO elitist, and that you kind of dismiss, you know, the importance of the DMT. And I've heard you say before that mixing DMT with 5-MeO is essentially like not needed, because the 5-MeO just overpowers. It's just that much more powerful that it overpowers the DMT. And I remember checking with you before I did the session, like, hey, like, she's working with MDMA, DMT, and 5-MeO. I'm like, isn't this like a little too much? So I think it's interesting to notice and to hear the discussion between you two, because I know Nyx is very enthusiastic about the role that DMT has to play in the work with 5-MeO and how it works differently.
Yeah. You know, my own experience there, it might be colored by the fact that I experienced 5-MeO before I ever experienced DMT. So I do think maybe that the order in which things come into one's life could make an impact. So in my experience, I did try mixing DMT with 5-MeO a few different times just to kind of see what would I get. And what I found every time was that the 5-MeO just completely overwhelmed the DMT. So there wasn't anything that I could distinctly say was a DMT aspect of the experience. And part of that could be because I completely opened up to 5-MeO from my very first experience, right? I was one of these people with zero resistance of any kind. So my very first experience was all the way into the infinite orgasm of non-dual awareness and oneness. And it was this absolutely divine experience. So there was no lead up. There was no breakdown that had to be achieved in order for me to get there. So it was just this instantaneous opening. And I think that something like that can then energetically color someone's experience in the sense of, well, not, you know, I just went all the way and it was effortless. So then later, I had my first few experiences with DMT, and my initial assessment was just like, okay, that was really interesting, but that's nowhere near as interesting as what 5-MeO does. I mean, it was really beautiful. It was, you know, very complex, but it was also very distinct. And this is kind of, it's kind of ironic because, you know, when I shift out of my ego, my voice changes rather dramatically. And when I took DMT for the first time, my voice immediately shifted. Yet, I could also feel this is not anywhere near as expansive. So that there's still some aspect of personhood that is still present within the DMT experience, even though my energy has shifted. So it was interesting because I, from the 5-MeO experience, I kind of came to this idea of, well, okay, God is energy. So the more energy that we feel, the more we feel God, right? But then with DMT, it's like, okay, well, this is very energetic. It's very powerful in that sense, but it's nowhere near as powerful as 5-MeO. And that sense of the presence of God or the identity with God just wasn't there. It was, so in other words, it presented itself to me as, this is a show. It's an interesting show, but it's a show. And then later I tried combining DMT with 5-MeO, and that's when I found, and again, I think it's just because I was so easily opened up by 5-MeO that it just completely overpowered the DMT. So at that point, I was like, well, for me, it felt pointless to mix them because it just seemed like a waste of the DMT. So I wanted to save my DMT so that my wife and I could do DMT dance parties, which was a totally different kind of practice and experience that we did quite a bit of years ago before our son was born. And it's interesting, you know, Ralph Messner's book, The Toad and the Jaguar, which honestly, I don't think is that significant of a book about 5-MeO. I don't think it's really all that informative, but he also said sort of the same thing in his book where he said initially that he was serving people DMT and 5-MeO, but eventually found that people weren't really getting much out of the DMT aspect of it and that it was being overwhelmed by the 5-MeO. So he eventually just dropped that and just served people straight 5-MeO. So yeah, I'm curious, and especially Helgi, if you did go with all three, the MDMA, the 5-MeO, and the DMT, I'm really curious to hear what your perception of that was. And so I want to invite you in to talk about your experience now, but I'll just say there was one time that I served a woman 5-MeO, and she was actually coming back, I think, for her third session with me. But she had been really nervous the first couple of times. So the third time, and this is really interesting, she was actually formerly a Catholic nun. Anyway, her third time, she took MDMA before she came over, and she had a friend bring her over, and she's like, yes, I'm on MDMA, so go ahead, give me the 5-MeO, I'm so ready for it. And I gave her 5-MeO, and the funniest part of the session, you know, I also worked with this feather, right? I would use this feather to brush people off energetically. And I'm standing over her and I'm feathering her. And at one point she opened her eyes and she looked at me. And this was just such an MDMA moment. She's looking at me. She's this older woman. And she's just like, oh, I didn't bring enough money. Because she was just thinking about how much she was enjoying this whole experience. And that she wanted to pay me more than the cash that she had brought with her. And I will say that I found later, like towards the end of my facilitation time, is when I started exploring MDMA more myself personally. And I definitely found that if I took MDMA the night before I did a session with somebody with 5-MeO, I would feel the influence of the MDMA when I was serving people 5-MeO. And because there was always this transference that was taking place, my clients would then later, they would tell me, they're like, there was something different about the 5-MeO. Like the people who repeatedly would come back for multiple sessions with me. So if I had had MDMA the night before, they would feel it the next night that I was serving them. And they would say, yeah, there was something different, that it was kind of something more gentle and open and soothing about it. And I tell them, oh, that's because I took MDMA last night. You know, so they would feel it. It would impact them because I was holding that energy and it would, you know, impact their experience. So that's enough of me rambling on about my own particular experiences. Helgi, so let's get into you now. And maybe let's start with your desire and interest in having the 5-MeO experience. And then Nyx shows up in your life and then wow. You get to do it. So just tell us your end of the story.
So yeah, and I waited for a long, long time, even before taking it, because I had heard so much about 5-MeO and all these crazy stories and people going through very intense things, and I was aware that this is the real stuff we're talking about, and I procrastinated for many months, and eventually I said to Nyx, like, okay, I'm willing to work with you, but I'm just gonna work with MDMA. And this is the story that I had to tell myself, mm-hmm. because I don't think I would have voluntarily just showed up for a 5-MeO session. I was just too afraid of it. And I had to tell myself that I was just going to do MDMA in the session. And somehow that did not feel stressful to me. And then I show up for the session and we do MDMA and it's like, very much a moment of like, what now? Like, and she's just patiently waiting, and she's like, she tells me like, you know why you're here. And I just have to like, okay, I guess I know why I'm here. I think I set this up for myself to go through this, and then I remember taking my first hit of 5-MeO-DMT, and was very surprised by how not scary it is. I was like, this session was very much about me getting over my own fear of 5-MeO. Because to me, it's the least scary psychedelic I have ever done, apart from ketamine, maybe. But it's so, for me, it's so easy to work with. It's so effortlessly dissolves the ego. There's no time to squirm around or hold on or like go into these difficulties. There's just no time, at least for me. I know some people have difficulties with 5-MeO, but for me, it was so effortless and easy. So I partly got over my fear of 5-MeO. I can say confidently now that I'm like, I'm hesitant to jump back in, but at least I don't have this mortal fear of it.
Yeah.
As I used. So MDMA was very crucial in kind of bridging that gap for me.
Yeah, so it sounds like you wouldn't have agreed to take 5-MeO unless you had already been on the MDMA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And since then, have you tried 5-MeO just on its own and been able to compare?
Yes, yes. That was my feeling after working with 5-MeO with MDMA is that I felt the MDMA was, in some respects, blocking some areas for me. Hmm. Because when I take MDMA, there are certain emotions and certain energies that feel inaccessible. Like, I've never been able to cry on MDMA, and there are certain emotions that I've not been able to feel because it so dramatically enhances the positive emotions.
Yeah.
Now, and I was like, I was more interested in working with 5-MeO on its own without having the MDMA influencing the experience. Mm. So then we did another session shortly after, and we worked just with 5-MeO.
Yeah, honestly, like I don't know into which point this is just a belief about that MDMA blocks.
Yeah,
because when I work with clients with MDMA, I saw everything. I saw clients being crying a lot, screaming, vomiting to each other. like all types of expressions. I didn't saw in that sense MDMA blocking, but I can also understand that, and this is one of the things I also saw, like the MDMA experience itself changed a lot depending on the beliefs you have about it. Mm-hmm. So people that they never tried MDMA before, they're completely open to whatever, but others that they had already experienced with MDMA, they have usually this tendency of projecting themselves in a certain way. And yeah, I honestly believe that is just ego playing.
Yeah, but it's one of these things that becomes very personalized. So if Helgi had developed that belief that I can't access my more troubling emotions on MDMA, then, you know, what's the workaround? Well, the workaround is to try something else, because that can really get solidified, because it is very easy for people to slip into patterned behavior, even on psychedelics. Like, that was something that I saw a lot in my own practice of facilitating, that especially people with prior psychedelic experience, like, honestly, one of the biggest issues was people coming from either an ayahuasca tradition or from the Santo Daime Church, which we have here in Ashland, which is the ayahuasca church. And they would try and bring in all of the same stuff, you know, so they'd come in and they'd want to do their ikaros, or they'd want to sing their daime hymns during the 5-MeO experience. They'd want to treat it the same way. And that was a difficult thing to overcome with people. But it was possible. But that's, you know, once somebody has a certain relationship to a psychedelic and feel that maybe, well, it has these limitations or I get these expectations from it, then, yeah, it could be hard to break that. But not that it needs to be broken, because, you know, that's just the way that it is for Helgi. And but certainly for other people, they might be screaming and crying and throwing up on MDMA. And, you know, like even mushrooms, like a lot of people don't throw up on mushrooms, but some people do, you know. So, and what blows my mind is some people tell me that they never get any visuals from mushrooms. And for me, I can't understand that personally, but it happens. You know, there are people say, yeah, I took 5 grams of mushrooms and I felt a lot of stuff, but I didn't see anything. And it's like, well, that's really interesting, because if I were to take 5 grams, I mean, that'd be like over the top visual for me. And I get visuals from like 1 gram. So, you know, just different people respond differently. And then, you know, we all have our own, not only our ego structures, but our own natural biochemistry of how things are operating inside of us. And, you know, like some people need twice the dose that other people need, and other people just need a fraction. So, you know, there's all these room for possibilities. But going back to the MDMA and 5-MeO, I mean, I certainly can see them as working very well together. I mean, personally, I think combining MDMA with just about anything produces a pretty interesting experience. And but what I have noticed, and Helgi and I have talked about this, what I have noticed in combining MDMA with anything else is that really, in my opinion, I get a third experience. Okay, so there's the MDMA, and then there's whatever I'm combining it with that have their own. The MDMA experience is this. Say the mushrooms or the 4-ACO-DMT or the 5-MeO-MIPT or the MXE is this. But once you combine it with MDMA, then it's this third thing that's not either the MDMA or the 4-ACO-DMT or 5-MeO-MIPT or 5-MeO-DMT, but it's actually this third thing that has its own unique synergy of energies and presentations, which is totally fascinating. I mean, I love that, you know, so I don't think it takes away from the experience at all, but I do feel that it produces a different experience.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, for me, the main thing is precisely being able to connect so deeply with the person that I understand exactly what tool to use, because at the end it's just different tools that is like, okay, what, you know, like for example, I'm working with a person that have schizophrenia and is using meds, and I cannot give anything of this except ketamine. And ketamine works amazing, and you know, we are going through there, but
yeah. So Helgi, going back to your first experience, do you recall Nick's working with you through the 5-MeO portion of the experience, or were you just blasted out into 5-MeO MDMA land? What do you really recall from that event?
Both of these things. A large amount of the experience is kind of non-accessible to me. It was like from the get-go, it was hard to form memories about that experience. Because it just takes place outside of your own sense-making apparatus, that it's hard for you to construct any kind of memories from it. But I do remember Nick's working with my energy in a very similar way that I've seen you on pictures, like working with people using the hands and bilateral symmetry. And I remember that having a very clear effect on the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And I even felt like in the night sometimes, because we sleep in rooms next to each other with quite thin walls, I would feel in the night sometimes, I would feel Nix's presence working with her hands in me. Like in the middle of the night, and sometimes I was a little spooked by it because I just wanted to sleep. Like, Nyx, why are you coming now? Working on my energy. It's like, there's a time and place for everything.
Yeah, it can be hard to have boundaries when you're also both roommates, you know. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I even get that from people that I never worked with, where I have people contact me and say, yeah, I was doing 5-MeO last night, or even I was asleep and I was dreaming, and they tell me, and then you were there and you were working on me. And then they want to know, like, so what's your take on it? And I always have to tell myself, well, that was your projection of me, because, you know, I wasn't really there. That was just your energy using me as a figure to do that. But it is interesting, sort of that phenomenon of, again, sort of this transference and sort of the dissolution of boundaries, and then the after impacts of, you know, a session that you then might feel and recall later, or then even, you know, like in my case, as I've just said, that it can even happen with people that I've never worked with, but, you know, because they've heard about it, or, you know, they've read about it or whatever, that then they can have those kinds of experiences. But it is this interesting dynamic that happens when the facilitator and the client are both open to energy and that transference and the process that takes place there, and the sort of the intuitive understanding. And it's both challenging for clients and for the person facilitating. So, like, Nyx, you were saying about how, you know, when you were going through your opening, you were just being able to look at people like, oh, God, like that person has a headache or whatever. And I can remember from my very first mushroom experience, which really wasn't all that powerful of an experience, but I was at a festival, and me and my friends, we took some mushrooms. It was my first time taking mushrooms. And I got separated from my friends. And as I'm walking around this festival, I was like looking at people. I was like, shit, I could just like look right into people, and I could just see, like, I can see the weight of what that person is carrying. So I didn't want to look at anyone because it felt like I was just seeing too much, you know, and I didn't know how to deal with it at that time. Now, later, as I got into my own facilitation, that served me very well, because then it's just immediate intuition of, okay, this is what's taking place here. But to suddenly be open to that can be startling, because it is this issue of, well, where are the boundaries? Where are the borders? But Helgi, getting back to you, so then you guys top that one off with DMT?
At one moment, we blended DMT with it.
Yeah.
I remember it being feeling more complete with the DMT. And I've never really worked with DMT before this moment. In a way, this was my first experience with DMT, was with MDMA and 5-MeO. But I remember the DMT filling up the experience in a certain sense. Because I feel like 5-MeO really gets you into the emptiness and the openness. But there is a certain filling that DMT seems to bring, this light that is kind of infused into the experience.
Honestly, one of the things I found with people that I just still blocks to work with is that when they are taking DMT, their mind goes into this complete calmness, at least for some time, not, you know. And when it's 5-MeO, is the same, but with the body, if they surrender into it, of course. So the interesting thing, a part of the combination that itself is that it's doing both at the same time, calming and making both parts to just be into the source. Is that also, and it's actually what I perceive with Helgi in this, at this moment, is that it's a lot more work at this moment of healing their own perspective that have, their own mind, their ego with himself, than more than the energetic work to do. That, of course, is stuff to do there, but I have the feeling that the next thing Helgi to go through is actually to work a lot more with DMT than with 5-MeO before going into 5-MeO. And it's actually one of the things also I found really interesting, how sometimes you can get stuck into working with DMT, and then you can continue with Fameo, but you can also get stuck into that. You can continue with DMT. And it's this kind of wheel that you can use.
Yeah, well, in a sense, that's sort of how I used Salvia, that, you know, if I was working with clients that I felt that they got stuck, you know, because that does happen where you, it doesn't matter what you're working with, you can get stuck. But I found for me the great unsticker was Salvia, just because it's so different and so unique that nobody ever knew how to react to that. So I found that that was the great unstucker. Was like, okay, you're stuck, let's use some Salvia, and you know, that'll turn you inside out a few times. And so then going back to 5-MeO after that would be a very different experience. And I would also use that for people who weren't really reacting to 5-MeO, which there are people out there that happens, where you give them 5-MeO and it's kind of, well, nothing's happening, why not? Well, so something's stuck somewhere, and so they're, by giving them some Salvia, it's just such a weird subterranean experience that it can usually find whatever is stuck in some way, even though it's incomprehensible. That then magically, in a sense, then you give people 5-MeO after that, and all of a sudden, oh, okay, this is what it is.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this about that people that doesn't react to 5-MeO, because it happened to me the opposite with clients with DMT, of giving them like huge amounts of DMT, like giving 200 grams and nothing happening to them. And usually what I found is that with 5-MeO, that goes away. And usually when I want that someone have a proper breakthrough with DMT, if I combine first with a little of 5-MeO, that actually allows to go through. So it's really interesting. Like, I actually really want to research a lot more Salvia. I almost don't have experience with it.
It's not the most popular one.
No, it's not. No. Okay, so a practical question then is, working with people with 5-MeO on top of a bed of MDMA, that's obviously a long commitment. So then how long is a session, and when in the session does the application of 5-MeO come into it?
So usually minimum is 6 hours of work.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
I had sessions where I started at 11 and I ended at 1 a.m. of the next day. Usually don't go into that unless it's really neat. But that is also the reason for me that I only work with this method just once per week maximum, because it's really exhausting. But the good point is that I, like, in one session we can get so much work done, so much. That is what I'm doing, because it's really worthy. And I feel, especially here in Iceland, is a lot of people, they already went really far in their own development, and it's just a search of how we can go even farther, you know. But yeah, it's a big commitment always for working such a long time. I usually also eat during the session.
Yeah, well, it's a long time to be working, and so within, let's just say, the average span of 6 hours, during the MDMA time, what is happening during that time period? I mean, are you having people lie down? Are they closing their eyes? Are you talking? Are you interacting? Are there differences depending on the person? But what would be your standard there for how you're working with the MDMA and then introducing the 5-MeO? Like, what's the progression that occurs within a session then?
So my standard, if it's a standard, because I always really try to flow with the person completely and for whatever is needed. And yeah, but usually the first part is, okay, let's see if the person surrendered completely into MDMA. It sometimes happens that I'm giving a proper amount of MDMA, depending on their weight, but still is not working the MDMA. So that is for me the first step. I'm like being sure that the person is in that state. And sometimes that requires meditation. Sometimes I sing for them, you know, just trying to be in this state of opening their hearts into feeling this love to themselves and everything around. And once they are there, well, lately what I do a lot is that I take a little bit of DMT, sometimes fine mail, and from there I just go with my intuition completely. It's just like, okay, this person needs now maybe at the beginning DMT or maybe fine mail, and maybe it's just a little, maybe it's just big punch, maybe it's one and then before reintegrating another, you know, or even three times of that in a row. But yeah, it's especially that, like, you know, allowing myself to be completely taken and take away completely my ego and being fully in intuition mode, we can say. And from there, just, yeah, do the work. I think, like, actually, I would love to actually share this experience with you, because I think it's really, really interesting. One of my last works that I did in Spain, I went to see this spiritual center that my uncle is making. You remember the earlier story at the time. So he have right now that place. And we were using first time for a session. My uncle, my aunt, partner I have, and my cousin, and me, everyone took MDMA together. And then from there, at the moment I went into this state of just completely opening, like I was just completely in my intuition, okay, let's work with my cousin. And then I started to work with Five Male, and then, yeah, he was just screaming and vomiting, and, you know, we were just working with that at the same time that my aunt, my uncle, and my partner, they were just meditating and saying, like, we love you, you know? It was a really surreal situation, because it was the first time I was doing such a work with people around me. And then we went into this loop, this kind of orgasmic loop, and at some point, everyone else was used of any substance, but me and my partner were still there, you know, like just continuous orgasm of just reflecting each other energy. And that was the first time, by the way, that I experienced such a thing. And it was so powerful. I just wanted to share it because I'm so happy that, yeah, that this happened. And I'm really surprised that this was able to happen.
Nick, in talking about sort of the combinations and transference of energies, so you mentioned that in your sessions that sometimes you might take some DMT or some 5-MeO to decide, you know, is it time to give to the client? Have you noticed reactions from your clients when you take something? So for example, for me, in my sessions, I learned this was very, very early on in the time that I was doing sessions, where I had a client and I felt like, okay, this person isn't quite going far enough. So I just smoked a little bit more, 5-MeO. And immediately this woman sat up and she's like, what the fuck did you just do to me? Was her response. I was like, oh, I didn't realize that she would feel it. But that's what happened, is that I smoked more and she felt it and she thought I was quote unquote doing something to her. And, you know, this is a woman who ended up coming back many times to do many sessions with me. So once she understood and I understood, okay, this is part of the reality that when we're working here, when we're open energetically, it doesn't really matter who takes the hit, because we're all going to feel it, because we're all feeling the same thing, because we're really all one being interacting with itself in this context. So I'm just curious so it sounds a little bit like you've had some of these experiences, but I'm just wondering specifically within your sessions, have you noticed that when you've taken some DMT, has suddenly your clients gone like, whoa, you know, like I found that transference was fairly immediate. And also it didn't happen every time. It depended on the openness of the client. That if somebody was, so if they were kind of rigidly holding on, that they might feel some aspect of it, but not the fullness of it, because there is still some resistance going on there. But if they were open, I could take more and they would keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like not only, like I think also this happened even sometimes for the entire house.
Okay, yeah.
You feel it when certain sessions are going on. It's like, oh, something's taking place.
Yeah. I even this feel because it was at, that at the beginning of this year is when I started to be able to go fully into non-duality and dissolving myself, like just going to, into this full dissolution, just meditating, just doing meditation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I notice is that when I'm doing this without need of closing my eyes or stop walking, like, I mean, I can really go into that without need of stopping other functions. Sometimes people say to me that I am doing something wrong or something that to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course. And actually this is, yeah. Especially with 5-MeO, with DMT, I will say is not so noticeable for them. What I can say, but it's actually the one that enchants more my intuition, in the sense of understanding, because 5-MeO is more just, you know, moving directly into it. Yeah. And then sometimes it's
yeah. Yeah. So Helgi, let me, since we've got the roommate here, I'm just curious of some of your own experiences and perceptions that you mentioned that you could feel, you know, when things are going on, because Nick's is, you know, working in the house. And, you know, just again, to relate to my own experience, for the first half of the time period that I was facilitating, my wife was always present in the room, and usually she would take a little 5-MeO along with me and along with the client. So we're kind of all in it together. And then eventually we moved into a different place where I would have sessions upstairs, and then my wife would usually stay downstairs and watch TV or, you know, whatever during that time period. But she almost always said, yeah, oh, you know, after the client would come downstairs, you know, my wife would say, so I really felt that. Yeah, and she would have an understanding of what the client had gone through. So she would always know, like, if it was a, quote, big session, or if it was like, oh, there was a lot of resistance. She always felt that. And that was one of the reasons that I ultimately decided that, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore because my son's getting older. And, you know, you can't, there's no boundaries, right? That the energy is just there, and like doing it in the home, that's a big thing. So, Helgi, what's it like then living in this kind of situation where you're going to be feeling these kinds of things?
I mean, it can be difficult, and it has been difficult to some degree to find the balance of, like, how much is the house willing to take of this, because this is a matter of balancing normal home life, having dinner, yeah, you know, ordinary things, and then very high level medicine work taking place. And it's a delicate balance of feeling like where the boundaries are in that respect. Yeah. And what I've felt many times is like, because I still deal with a lot of fear myself, and I'm going through this process of working through that. But usually when there's like a big scream that happens, yeah, there is something that's like, it's like this coldness sometimes that washes over you. And what can I say? It's like, I don't have this understanding of what happened or how the session was, but I feel this energy. Mm-hmm. And I feel, especially last time, I think Nick was working through something. She said she was working through horror.
Yes.
And you could feel it on the screen that this was not just the regular liberation scream of 5-MeO of ecstasy. This was, it had more of the feeling of horror to,
yeah,
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was particularly difficult to deal with, because you feel this energy being expunged out, and then it washes through your body too. And yeah, it can be a difficult discussion and dynamic of like, should the people be home while this is going on? Yeah. Like, because sometimes you just want to have dinner. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, honestly, that was actually the last time I worked here in a house. Like after that, I just decided to do all the 5 male sessions out. And actually, my intention when I'm going to leave this soon, like here, is going to try to work in the road while I'm traveling. Let's see how that goes.
So let people experience the energy in their own place, and you get to move on.
One of the crazy sessions that happened, it was the last one actually, and it's interesting because after that session, I had multiple people saying to me that they noticed it, and they were not in the home. They were like not only like friends or family, but also people that I almost don't know in Iceland, that they were saying to me, hey, that day something happened like really, really strongly. And that, and yeah, right after that happened, like an hour after, I actually started to receive messages about other people having a similar experience.
Well, I think that it points to just the fact that we are dealing with big energies here, and that the differences between us, the relative boundaries between us, really are permeable, because there really is only one. And so these reverberations, they do move out. And that's, I think that's part of the responsibility of being a facilitator, is really being aware of that. And of course, you're not personally responsible for other people and how they react to it. But it's just something that's good to know that, okay, we might try and confine it into this room, but we can't necessarily control that, because, you know, we are these non-local beings. We're localized into our individualized identities, but then we're also this non-local being that really is everywhere. And these reverberations do go out. And it just points to, you know, this is a big responsibility, that we're dealing with really big energies, really powerful experiences. And so, you know, we just need to treat it that way and be aware of it. And then also know that, well, we can't control it. Like if you've got to let out that scream for your client, which they're going to appreciate, and it's going to give Helgi the chills, you know, that's just kind of part of the package of being in the same house together. There's nothing we can really do about that other than to be aware that that's part of it. And that then sometimes it might be, you know, for Helgi, it might be, well, I'm going to have dinner out tonight. You know, maybe Nick's, maybe you could do it somewhere else, or, you know, and that was a dynamic that my wife and I had to work out as well, you know, in terms of me working with people and having big experiences. And, you know, she just wanted to watch TV. And then even I, as the facilitator, I could usually feel if someone was going to have a really challenging time, I would feel it before they showed up. It's like all of a sudden I'm feeling really anxious and nervous. I'm like, what is that? I was like, oh, that's the person. And then they show up and they're like, they're in this anxious ball. And I can, okay, yeah, I started feeling you before you got here. And so people who work in this capacity, you've got to be willing to kind of go through all of this stuff and to have these permeable boundaries. And that's why having clarity and trust within yourself is so important, so that you're not then being defensive or being accusatory of, oh, what did you do to me? You know, it's just, okay, this is part of the process, and it's this open exchange of energy. And sometimes it's messy and challenging and scary, and also sometimes orgasmic and beautiful, and it's intimate and it's weird. I just want to say it's been very nice to speak with you again, Nix, and it's always great to talk to you, Helgi. And Nix, I know that you're going to be going on the road after this, so I hope your travels take you amazing places.
Also for the surgery.
Yeah.
Later.
Okay. Well, go ahead and let's wrap up with that.
Okay. Sure. I think I was speaking about this quite a lot in the other podcast we had. About the facial dysphoria I have, and I was able recently to be with these doctors that specialize in facial dysphoria, and I was able actually to see how I'm going to look after it. But still, I still need quite a lot more money for being able to achieve it, and even when I already reserve it, I feel I want completely to trust this is going to happen, and that is the reason I spend the 20% of the of the price for make already the reservation for 17th of May. If I don't have the money for then, I will lose everything that I already paid. But I really feel this really big trust that this can really happen. And well, I actually make a link for this to check the campaign. It's actually really easy. It's just that I just send it to the chat. Mm-hmm. I'm usually quite bad at saying letters in English, so maybe you can actually say it for me.
Yeah, and I'll put it into the notes for the podcast episode as well. But it's a very easy URL. It's nek.uno, and this is where people can donate to help support you to get this surgery that you're looking for. Anybody who's listening, especially if you listen to the last podcast that we did with Nyx and really talking about her process of transformation into herself. And if this is something that you would like to support, then again, you can go to nek.uno and you can make a donation to help her with her upcoming surgery. And so it's a great way to support her in becoming more of herself and making a contribution to help someone in their life path. So.
Thanks a lot, Martin. Really. And thank you everyone that want to contribute in any sense. Completely. I'm also, by the way, completely open at this moment to speak with anyone who wants to speak directly with me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, how can people contact you then?
Actually, through this link, it's possible to make comments.
Oh, great.
And also to find my name in the video, and they actually also can find that name on Facebook. They can write me. Like I'm really open in that sense to receive any type of mail or message.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both for your time today, Nyx and Helgi.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, I'm sure that we will all talk again sometime soon.
Yes, we will.